We remember the golden age of Athens for sublime architecture, for the first blossoms of theater, for great philosophers like Socrates, the political innovations of democracy, for a cosmopolitan culture of liberalism, and we remember Greece in the 5th century BC for a long and brutal civil war that pitted that cosmopolitan liberalism against insular conservatives and Athens' fleet against Sparta's army. 2,500 years later, the Peloponnesian War continues to tell us lessons about empire and democracy, about the use and misuse of power, about the moral price of victory at any cost. Ever since, historians found analogies. Rome's Punic Wars, the long struggle between England and France, the American Civil War, and more recent conflicts too, Vietnam, the Cold War, the Middle East today. If you have questions about why this ancient war is still relevant, about what happened then, or about its modern echoes, give us a call at 800-989-8255 or send us an email, totn@npr.org. The latest historian to tackle the Peloponnesian War is classicist Victor David Hansen, who's also a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He joins us today from the studios of member station KVPR in Fresno, California. And Victor, nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me again, Neil.
You note in your introduction that there's been a sort of recent spate of books about the Peloponnesian War. Why another?
Well, I think that I'd want to do something more than just a strategic or political account, but try to retell the story from the viewpoint of the people who actually fought it. So the chapters are entitled things like fire, ships, horses, to really give you a view of the 200,000 or 300,000 people who were involved, and maybe a 250,000 of them died during this 27-year-long debacle.
One of the things that you point out is that sort of the way we measure things can be deceptive sometimes. Obviously, 5th century BC did not mean a lot to the Greeks of Athens and Sparta.
It didn't. It's funny how we have magnified the importance of the war, because in some sense it was just in the southeastern part of Europe. That's not a lot of the world even at that time. But in the 6th century AD, we started counting by centuries, and suddenly we threw out the Olympic dating of the Greeks, and suddenly Socrates dies in 399, Sophocles and Euripides in 406, Athens loses the war in 403, and bang, we have something called 5th century Periclean Golden Age Athens, and the war then becomes the metaphor for how democratic imperialism collapsed, with all the metaphors for the present era.
And one of the things that you raise, a disturbing question, you call it, is the amount of creative energy that was unleashed by this conflict, including the disturbing question of, well, all of those great plays, the questions of the philosophers, well, they were related to the war.
They were, and it's very ironic, because if we look at the landscape in which Socrates functioned in his 40s and 50s and 60s, where the great creative period of his life, from what we can tell from Plato, the young Plato, and the best plays of Sophocles, and especially Euripides, and Thucydides' history, all of this comes out of the conundrum of war, and it's almost as if, for a brief, intense, flaming period, Athens reaches its pinnacle precisely because everybody is motivated. And it's a life and death struggle. But it's not sustainable, as we learn after 27 years and perhaps 200,000 dead Athenians.
Victor Davis Hansen's most recent book is A War Like No Other, How the Athenians and Spartans Fought the Peloponnesian War. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And the great military conflict that presents itself is between, you're not the first to say, the whale and the elephant, the great navy of Athens and the superlative army of Sparta. And in the end, of course, Sparta has to develop its own navy and its own light forces, the kind of troops that were made fun of in earlier Greek histories.
Yeah, that's one of the great ironies of the war, that when they start, they're asymmetrical. So Athens has this wonderful 300-ship navy, and Sparta has this unbeatable army, and the one side who can mimic the other the best will win. And that's when the war ends, when Sparta, through Persian money, the intervention of the turncoat Alcibiades, turns out to be more innovative and creates a big navy to beat Athens' navy, cut off its tribute, cut off its food, cut off its access to its allies. And then Athens didn't really do what they had to do to win, which was to create a large pan-Hellenic army of liberation, go down to Sparta, defeat it in battles, free the Helots, and that'll have to wait 50 years to the great Theban liberator Epaminondas, who took a cue from Athens' failure.
And as
when
we
fought Sparta.
When he fought Sparta later, and the subject of one of your other books as well.
Yeah, it was, The Soul of Battle.
But as we look at this in terms of its reflection in modern history, from the Romans on down, the Peloponnesian War, and particularly because of its of the great storyteller, Thucydides, who told this story so brilliantly, has been used as this analogy to, I think, every other conflict that's ever been fought. Is there any... what do we learn from these analogies, do you think?
I think you learn a lot of things, and that is when each side goes to war, or any side goes to war, and does not have a strategy to win, then they're really dooming their youth to fight without a clear objective and without a clear resolution. We also understand that the reason that Sparta went to war was not a legitimate grievance. Everything that they had complained about, whether it was Megara or Epidamnus or Potidaea, could have been resolved, but the one thing that couldn't be resolved was this emotional grievance of fear. So we should remember that when a bin Laden or the Argentine dictatorship attacks the Falklands, these are usually brought out about by fear or honor or self-interest, primordial emotions, and they can lead to war when one side loses deterrence. Athens had no mechanism from stopping the Spartans from entering their own sacred territory of Attica. So I think that's important. The peace, even the peace of Nicias, solved nothing. So we should remember that if you're going to have an armistice and the original crisis that led to war is not addressed, you're only going to have what the Romans would call a bellum interruptum, just a cold war where each side, as they did in the Peloponnesian War, tries to gain advantage. And then finally, the great lesson is the war ended when one side lost, not when one side negotiated. And Athens lost its fleet, it lost its empire, it lost its long walls, it lost its democracy for a year. These are pretty bitter lessons, but they should remind us that that's the nature, as Thucydides said, the tragic nature of mankind, and it's predictable as long as his nature remains fixed.
Another lesson, though, is if you measured the date of the end of the Peloponnesian War a little bit differently, well, not too many years after that humiliation you talk about, Athens had its long walls, its navy, and its democracy back.
That's a very good point, because there were lots of historians that didn't really know of this Thucydidean concept of a 27-year-old Peloponnesian War. They thought there was a Decalean War, an Ionian War. Some said it didn't end at 395. Sort of like World War I. People said, well, the war started in 1914. Maybe it didn't end at 45. Or maybe in our own experience, we've had, in some ways, four Gulf Wars. We had the first one to get rid of Saddam out of Kuwait, then we had the no-fly zones, then we had the three-week war, and now this insurrection. So it's incumbent upon historians to try to create this period that they call a war, and Thucydides was the first one that saw it as a 27-year continuum, and that, I think that's why it made him so different than his contemporary.
And one thing you also point out, I'm afraid we just have a few seconds left, is that even after Athens recovered all of those trappings of its independence, it wasn't the same.
It wasn't the same because psychologically it had been wounded. Too many things had gone on. There had been kids, just like in Beslan, Russia, that had been killed in schoolhouses. There had been diplomats that were kidnapped. There had been targeted assassinations. There had been terrorism. And there had been this terrible plague that killed a fourth of the population. They just couldn't recover psychologically from all that.
Victor Davis Hanson, thanks very much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Victor Davis Hanson's most recent book is A War Like No Other, How the Athenians and Spartans Fought the Peloponnesian War. He joined us from the studios of KVPR in Fresno, California. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.